Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
And welcome to an MMA edition of Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you, and we have a great show for you today this evening. We have Aaron Brink on the line. It's been a while since we've spoken to Aaron Brink, probably about 4 or 5 years, but he's coming back. We've got a lot of catching up to do. We also, after Aaron, most likely in the second half of the show, we're going to be speaking with Luke Zachrich, former Ultimate Fighter, I think season 7 or season 8 contestant. He's been fighting for Bellator. He's fought for the UFC. He's a really decent, very, very good middleweight fighter who's trying to coil Alessio Sakara, and that's going to be a very, very interesting fight. We got him calling in. Later on in the program, we have the chat room open for you. Also, we have the phone lines open if you want to give a call, 347-326-9749. So without further ado, let's go to our first guest here. Aaron, it's been a while since we had you on Carson's Corner, and I want to fully get into what you've been doing since we spoke. But more generally, though, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
I know a lot of fans have been wondering what you've been up to, as well as the status of your MMA career. I mean, you're someone who I sometimes don't know how to categorize, because even though you've had periods of activity throughout your career for different reasons, you've always ended up back in the cage eventually. So, you know, I think some fans might have believed that you had retired at times. It's more correct to say that you're simply on hiatus and you're looking to come back now, correct?
Yeah, that's definitely correct, Bob. You know, I just I took enough time off. I last fought in 2014, and I mistakenly took two fights with a broken rib, and knowing I had the injury, it was a stupid move on my part. But I was in a financial bind, and I took the fight, and it was kind of a questionable move on my part. And I will never do that again, especially this late in my career.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was going to ask you about, because you fought two times in 2014, and according to SureDog, those two fights in 2014 are your most recent appearances. And the thing that sticks out to me about those fights, even though I haven't seen them, on paper they appear to have unfolded the same way. According to SureDog, you lost both fights by verbal submission within the first minute, which immediately has me thinking some sort of injury or mishap may have occurred. Can you take the folks at home through your 2014 fights against Dan Huber and Ashley Gooch?
Yeah, absolutely. What happened was just before I was going to face Ashley Gooch in April, back in April, I tore my rib, and I had this rib injury that it was going through the cartilage, and I kept training on it. And so basically I fought Huber with the same injury. So I tapped out verbally. I didn't actually even get a chance to use verbally because the rib popped out while I was in the process of defending takedowns. It was the most difficult as I was trying to, defend. I was hoping for a striking bout in each fight, and neither occasion was I able to get a striking fight. You can't always get what you want in MMA. It's a fight. I verbally tapped because I felt the rib pop through the cartilage in both bouts. And I was supposed to face Gooch in April, and I decided not to. And I decided to owe it to the commission. I wanted to fight anyhow because I couldn't. I called short notice and with the rib injury and didn't take it. So I felt like I had to make it up to Ashley Gooch and to the commission to actually take the fight. But it was really detrimental to my career.
Yeah, because you've taken some time off since those fights. I mean, is that a direct result of those two losses and the injury, the way they happened and everything?
But that I definitely needed the time off, and the time off helped me. I took the time off and just took some time to think about whether I wanted to even compete again.
Right.
And then after I started feeling good, I started getting myself back, and I realized, hey, look, I don't have any bad tendon injuries. This rib injury is completely healed. Let me evaluate where I should go back and try to get my career back on track. I look back at my where was I best, and I was like 2010. I beat Dan Quinn real strong. That was a good fight for me, and I was like, who beat Dan Quinn after me? And I looked at the internet, I looked it up, and I saw the fight with Rick Bardell, and I was like, wait a second, this is the match I need to do for comeback. This is a perfect match for me.
Both Huber and Gooch, Huber for the World Series of Fighting, and Ashley Gooch is someone that we've sort of had our eye on. He's trained fighters when I see him. I think MMA fans who are familiar with your best work know that a prime Aaron Brink probably finishes both those guys by a KO or TKO. What lessons, if any, did you learn fighting in 2014 and the endings of those fights?
I questioned my ethics. I was like, what am I doing here? I'm taking these fights on short notice. I know better than this just because I need to pay my rent. It was a terrible move. I truly believe that I could defeat either one of those guys, even if I had to defend Ashley Gooch's 256 pounds, which I came in at 205. I was expecting a 205-pound bout. Gooch is advertised on SureDog as a 205-pound. I signed the contract as a 205-pound fight. Gooch came in at 256 lean, ready to fight. I didn't protest it, but it didn't help my situation with having a broken rib. But I believe I could totally beat either one of those guys if I'm fresh, uninjured, especially I have a good camp with me.
Did losing those two fights like that give you any sort of pause? I mean, like you said, you kind of reevaluated your career, but what was it more of a moment where you realized you had to adjust something specific rather than step away from competing? Go in there, get a good training camp, be injury-free, and then be the best, Aaron Brink you can be for the fights.
That's exactly right, Bob. I needed to take some time off, and then the time away gave me time to think, meditate, and let my body heal. I mean, without healing, there wasn't anything, but mentally healing too as well. Those losses, destroyed my ego, especially the Dan Huber fight, a guy that's only got a couple fights. It appears in the video that I just got completely outclassed by somebody who's outweighed by 10 pounds, who has absolutely no striking skills. He's a very talented wrestler, but I could have easily kept his takedowns at bay if I was 100%. I was at about 40% in that fight, and it's a real shame. So my ego is getting at me, and I'm thinking, why not give it another shot, and let's put the right fights together.
Now, I can understand why some of the bigger promoters would look at your most recent fights and wonder if they're getting the best Aaron Brink at this stage. But both you and I know that you could still fight, and I'm sure after the many wars you've been in there, there are some lingering questions about whether your body can withstand the same amount of punishment. In 2015, can Aaron Brink physically fight to the best of his considerable abilities?
Yeah, Bob, we're looking more like 2016 because we're almost out of 2015. I'm looking probably
right.
for, you know, February, March of 16 to come back. And you know, but I am training. I am ready. I do believe that I can endure it now. I'm doing massive amounts of cardio. I'm doing hills and interval training. I'm doing fast twitch fiber training. It's and my diet. I'm not dieting and calorie counting and watching my weight, trying to go down to 205 to walk around at 205, which would be my fight weight. I'm actually strength and conditioning as a 225-pounder, a 230-pound athletic, strong, powerful fighter like you would see in my earlier career.
You know, MMA fans can be cynical and demanding, but I know a lot of fans will be asking that question in their minds turning in, and I wanted to give you a chance to respond because I really feel like if you could put together a run of a few fights on the regional circuit, basically just to prove that everything still works okay, that you can get some of the other MMA shows to consider bringing you in and giving you an opportunity to reestablish yourself at a national level. I mean, offensively, I think you're probably the most underrated fighter of the early 21st century. I mean, 16 years, 100% finishing ratio, that's really an achievement. I feel like if your body and mind are right, Aaron Brink doesn't need much of an opportunity to knock a few people out, get a prelim fight, knock someone out, and then end up back on the main card somewhere on TV and knocking people out again. I mean, what do you think you need to do to get to that state where you can fight to the best of your ability, where your body is healthy and your personal life is in order?
Yeah, my personal life is definitely in order. My body and my cardio is there. I have zero injuries right now. I'm 100%. I'm putting together a training regimen right now that's designed for Rick Bardell. We're in anticipation that Rick Bardell will take the fight. The reason I choose Rick Bardell is because I reevaluated that we both beat Dan Quinn, and he makes
right.
the most sense. I believe that I could me beating a guy like Bardell will answer some of the questions. Hey, can I take a can my body take that type of it can endure that type of bout? And he's an intense individual. He's nothing. I'm not looking past Rick Bardell, but I believe it's a great fight for me. Dan Quinn did not defend takedowns well at him, and you can't let a guy like Rick Bardell get on top of you and punish you the way that Dan Quinn was expecting to let happen. I'm not going to let Bardell take me down. If he takes this fight, you can expect that I'm going to be a spider monkey with sledgehammers for fists, and he's just going to be scrambling and making him pay the entire fight until it's over with.
Yeah, I want to get to some of these potential matchups very, very soon. On a personal level, I wanted to ask how you're doing because I don't want to make you endlessly revisit some of the problems you had in the past. I mean, is there a tendency for other people to assume that every time something goes wrong in your life that your past issues must have somehow resurfaced?
You mean that would be the consensus? People would probably jump to that conclusion, but it's definitely not the case. I mean, the television shows and stuff, the reality TV shows and stuff that I was aired on, in the late 2008, 2009, whatever. I mean, it's just that stuff's behind me, and you can expect. I mean, I need to make an exclamation point with my next fight. That's what I need to do, and that's what's going to speak the loudest at this point, not what I'm saying.
Yeah, very good point. I want to take a moment to give a big shout-out to Dan Quinn, who you've mentioned, who's been absent from the Internet and Carson's Corner for a while. There have been some mixed reports, but the last we heard, Dan was doing okay, despite what seemed to be a little bump in a road or two. Aaron, as someone who's been in the same position as Dan, a former fighter trying to return to normal life after a stint in jail in a country which seemingly punishes people for simply being different, what advice do you have for Dan at this stage, trying to fit into society in ways which an unsympathetic and blind legal system demands?
You know, I like Dan. I understand Dan more than most people do. I became friends with Dan. I haven't heard from him in a while. I've reached out to him on social media, I have no response from Dan, so I don't know if he's okay. I don't know what his status is, but I would tell him, you know, just remember, keep in mind, he's a deadly weapon no matter what happens. Don't put your hands on people who are not professionals. That's the advice I would give to somebody who's kind of a exciting type character, and that the law is, you know, the laws are, there's no self-defense laws. You know, you can't protect yourself without being prosecuted, so be careful out there, Dan.
Now, Rick Vardella, I know some people would consider this almost a revenge match, as Dan defeated Rick and then lost him, and you're still perceived to have a connection to Dan. But you mentioned that your desire to fight Rick is just to see where you are, just to make a matchup, because he was the last person to beat Dan going back, I think, to 2011. He's a dangerous opponent, but in some ways a flawed fighter due to his resilience on power and getting the top position, but certainly on the feet, a fight between Rick Vardell and Aaron Brink is like a piece of toast fighting a hungry dog. I mean, on paper, Vardell versus Aaron Brink in a stand-up fight is just a matter of time, but could you keep it there long enough once Vardell charges you, tries to push you into the cage and muscle you to the ground somehow?
That's exactly what Rick Vardell needs to do to win that fight. The only way he's going to be able to be successful is to try to get – he's got to realize I am not as easy to take down as Dan Quinn. I am very difficult to take down, especially when I'm working takedown defense. I'm a very experienced wrestler. I know exactly what – he has no level change. He's not going to change levels and shoot, or he's going to try to muscle me up against the fence, and he's going to try to, you know, rip my legs out from under me and just get on top and get a finish. That's not going to happen. If he somehow gets me off my feet, he's going to have to keep working and working. I'm going to scramble back to my feet. I'm going to wall walk. I'm going to snake. I'm going to keep moving the entire time. I'll be on my hips. I will be moving. He's not going to get a stoppage. And Dan just sit there and let him beat on him. Dan can take quite a beating. I'm not going to take any chances like that. I'm going to most likely going to keep him from getting me the takedown at all. But if he does get the takedown, he can expect him to be scrambling. He's going to have to work to keep that takedown.
Yeah, and at this point, he hasn't fought. Vardell hasn't fought, I think, since 2011. He's up there in age. He's got to be 47, 48 years old. Is there any indication that he's even still active anymore?
You know what? I wouldn't even know. That's why I reached out to Ted Williams, and Ted Williams said he would love to see that fight happen. He's going to see what he can do. He's going to reach out to the appropriate channels. So we reached out through the promotion of the Gladiator Challenge, which he was a super heavyweight champion of. So I'm looking for Gladiator Challenge and a venue where he could sell tickets, where Vardell could sell tickets, and then I could come up there, and I've offered to do it on a win only basis. I win, I get a bonus. If I don't, it's on me. I trip home. That's how confident I am about the fight, and I know that the fight would be absolutely perfect for me. It'll answer a lot of questions right now, whether I should am even able to compete at this age, and if I can withstand the punishment from a man that intense, which I know that I'm going to be just fine in that fight.
Well, like I said, standing up, it's a mismatch, but even though you have submissions in general in your arsenal, the question about your career was always whether or not you could survive on the ground against better grapplers long enough to get back on your feet. I mean, how do you view the ground aspect of it? I mean, both in terms of sport as a whole and your own career so far as a fighter. I mean, is that an arena in which you believe that you've neglected at all, or are you starting to
There was a time where I never surpassed the blue belt level in jiu-jitsu or whatever, but I've long surpassed that. I've done a lot of work. I work with Paul Stark over at the Arena MMA. Paul Stark is an amazing black belt in jiu-jitsu. Right now, I've just been focusing on my stand-up. I'm training with Ted Cook. He's out of Orange County. He's a guy I've been sparring with since 2007. He's actually sparring partners with Keith Berry, as questionably, arguably, probably one of the hardest punching 185-pounders in the sport of MMA. I have the strength and conditioning coaches. I have Escondido Fight Club is actually out of service right now, but they're in the process of resurrecting the Escondido Fight Club, and I'm trying to get in touch with these guys to train with some of those guys and get the sparring locally so I don't have to go all the way down to the Arena MMA.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got all hands on deck there. In some ways, I wonder if the strength of your striking has almost worked against you at times, because you're in there against guys who know that you have a 100% finish ratio, 80% of those knockouts, and they know that if they get you to the ground, or so, if they don't get you to the ground, then they may be knocked out brutally. So sometimes I wonder if people were afraid of your striking so much that it made them stick to a strict game plan of grappling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, here's the thing. I used to overcommit with my punches, but I'm definitely going to watch with Rick Wardell and anybody. If I'm going to face somebody right now, I know that the consensus is that I have a good striker. So what I need to do is not overcommit with strikes. Expect that if I'm overcommit with strikes, I'm going to get my hips sucked in and they're going to get behind my hips and I'm going to end up getting taken down or change levels on and shot on and end up on my back. You know, I've been thinking about that. I've been working on that a lot. I'm not overcommitting on any of my striking, but at 225, 230 pounds as opposed to 200 pounds, the difference in my striking is unbelievably different. I mean, it's like night and day difference. And when I'm at 200 pounds, I take away all the intensity that I bring to the sport.
Now, if you end up getting this fight with Wardell and take him out, you should then regain some momentum inside the cage, and that's going to help with getting some of these potential big fights I know you're angling for. Alternatively, the shocking porn stunt might also work to get attention. But is that something you still have involvement?
No,
with?
I have absolutely no involvement in that, and I don't engage in that type of stuff anymore. My spirituality is good now, and I don't have any of that stuff going on.
Yeah, it seems that things have changed completely, I mean, in that industry. I mean, even 15 years ago, both with the internet and with society more in general. Now it seems like the dark side of the industry is being scrutinized and reported on more closely by the mainstream. We just heard about multiple allegations of assault and even rape against James Dean, who was an adult actor. Have you had any type of interaction with Dean?
No, I don't know him well. I've seen him around, you know. He's been around in some of the same projects that I was involved in, but this whole business, it dwindled because of the economy in 2007, 2008. The economy took a crash, and henceforth the industry took a crash. So I actually got out of it. You know, it was just spiritually destroyed. I promised my mother on her deathbed, "Hey, Mom, I'm gonna clean up and I'm gonna stay away from that stuff." You know, she was devastated that I was doing that for a living. You know, and I'm not even wanting to say it out loud what I did. It was just I'm not involved with it anymore. I don't choose to pursue that industry anymore. The industry is not what it used to be. It's taken over by webcam. It's taken over by internet, these websites or whatever. And I don't even look at those websites. I stay away from it. It's all poison.
Yeah. Well, I respect your mindset, and I respect your spirituality, you know. And you look at what happened with Charlie Sheen and all that stuff. It's really, really, really changed, I think, for the worse.
Yeah, my ex-wife was very close with Charlie Sheen. She was actually, what became public recently, I had actually heard a buzz about that about a year and a half ago from my wife. I just kept it, you know, I felt like Charlie was so nice to my, he was friends with my ex-wife. He was very good to her, so I didn't want to expose anything. I never told anybody about that. I've always heard nothing but good things. He's a really kind, nice man, according to her. So I never wanted to hurt his career or hurt him in any way.
All right, let's shift gears and bring this home by discussing some of the big fights you're hoping to complete your career with. I know you were supposed to fight James Quinn, the previous King of the Gypsies, but that fight didn't happen. Then Quinn was supposed to fight Ken Shamrock, and that hasn't happened either. Why didn't that fight happen with Quinn? What were the problems there, Fanny?
That's more of a question you could ask him. I've always been 100% readily available for that. When that was a fight I would have actually been, I would have liked to have, and I will still consider that fight. I have a lot of respect for James. He's a really nice guy. You know, he's a gentleman. Another guy is this Dada 5000 guy. He's a complete thug. I've been on the internet. We've been shod back and forth with each other. You know, Dada 5000, he's you know, he backed down. He would not fight me. He just kind of disappeared all of a sudden, fizzled away. I challenged him to a professional fight. He's talking about coming and attacking me in a parking lot. You know, I mean, not to bring up, you know, smut, but this is the guy's got, you know, I can't wait to see Kimbo knock him out in the first minute, first round.
Yeah, well, Kimbo is definitely a real professional fighter. No question about that. And Dada seems like a guy with very little verifiable experience, even in backyard fights, you know. He seems to be a really big guy, rigid guy who stands up completely straight and either gets taken down or tagged on the feet. And his main offensive skill set is basically being an above beginner level boxer, you know.
He throws arm punches with his chin up in the air, and he relies strictly on the fact that he's a 260, 275-pound guy or whatever he is that comes up there and just, and he's got arm strength. That's the worst thing he can do. He fights me, I guarantee you I will do the same thing Kimbo Slice is going to do to him.
Yeah, I would have to believe that Aaron Brink would crush Dada 5000, barring some sort of cosmic fluke. Would that fight even get sanctioned with the difference in experience levels? You know, I mean,
well,
I guess anything's
Kimbo,
possible. Yeah.
Kimbo Slice is, I mean, as a decorated fighter. At the time when I called out Kimbo Slice, he was more of like what Dada is now at the time. Now Kimbo Slice is a veteran of MMA, very
right.
Experienced. He knows jiu-jitsu. He's very, very gifted striker. Dada 5000 is nothing but a street thug with absolutely no talent standing up. He's nothing more than his arm punches and you know, and all his holes in his game. He's a slice of Swiss cheese.
Yeah, well, you know, you might have to sandbag and fake being washed up in order to convince anyone to let you get in the ring with Dada. But in any event, the main thing is that that will make this fight happen. If you return to finishing your opponents, if you can prove that you're making a serious comeback, and I could see you making the big shows undoubtedly. It's been great to have you back on Carson's Corner after hiatus. Whatever happens with your next movement site, please come back again in the future to discuss it. Let's give people any type of social media, any type of websites that you want to direct them to.
Yes, I wanted to plug Coastal Pay. I'm actually working at Coastal Pay in Carlsbad, California. I'm working in the merchant processing there. We guarantee that we can beat anybody's deals. If you're taking credit cards as a form of payment, at Coastal Pay, we guarantee we can beat anybody's price. So save some money, you know, make me a little pre-commission, and also save you put some money back in your pocket for the holidays. You can get that as info@coastalpay.com. You can mention that you were on Aaron. You as a result of Aaron Brink on the Carson's Corner show.
And you're on Facebook as well, right, Aaron?
Yes, sir. I'm on Facebook. Aaron Brink 2012 at yahoo.com is my Facebook ID.
All right, beautiful. Listen, we're going to keep tabs on this. I'd love to see you guys fight. I think it'd be great, and I'd love to see you do well in MMA. And I consider you a friend, my friend. So, you know,
likewise.
Let's continue to be in contact. And best of luck and Happy New Year, my friend.
Hey, God bless you. Thank you, Bob. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to you.
You too, my friend. Take care. All right, that was Aaron Brink here on Carson's Corner. Big fan of his, man. I've been really communicating with Aaron off and on for years now. And he's just one of these guys that, you know, he's a really, really good, humble guy. And he is a specimen, I'll tell you. Aaron, go watch some of his fights. Go watch his fight versus Rich Franklin. You know, go Google or go YouTube his fight versus Rich Franklin and wonder what would happen if his foot didn't get caught in the cage. You know, I mean, he was standing there toe-to-toe with Rich Franklin, who's just a really, really, obviously now retired, but tremendously dangerous striker. And, you know, it was basically a draw. In fact, you could probably make the argument that Aaron was getting the best of Rich Franklin. Who knows? But I'm telling you, Aaron Brink is a solid MMA fighter, and I hope that he's able to fight Rick Vardell. I was going to reach out to what's his name, Cal Worsham. You know, because I remember going back to 2009 or 2010, I contacted Cal for an interview because Cal was on this program when X-Arm was launching, you know, that arm wrestling / fighting league that was put on by Art Davey. This is going back years ago. And I'll tell you, Cal was not a fan of this program, not a fan of myself. He was very, very angry with some of our Dan Quinn interviews, and he characterized us as being anti-military, anti-this and that. So I haven't spoken to him. I would have reached out if I had a good relationship. But, you know, hopefully the people over at Gladiator Challenge will hear this. Hopefully they'll be able to put this match up together. Okay, and I think it would draw a lot of attention to for MMA fans in that area, in that neck of the woods. We're going to be right back after this brief timeout. We're hoping to speak to Luke Zachrich here on Carson's Corner. He should be calling in momentarily, so keep it right here on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Strangled and mangled.
what a great move. All right, this is Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you. Welcome back to the program. I want to welcome the folks over at the Underground Forum. Thank you very much for listening to the program. Big thanks to Aaron Brink, who was with us at the top of the hour. I want to wish him well. Hope that he's able to fight in Gladiator Challenge or some other promotion very, very soon in the new year. What do we got going on in MMA? You know, we've got Ronda just apparently did an interview with MMAfighting.com, and she's going to be out for 3 to 6 months, or she said, I didn't get a chance to read the interview, but one of the headlines I saw was it's going to take her 3 to 6 months just to eat an apple. So that obviously means that she's not going to be able to compete anytime soon. You know, if she's not able to really sustain any type of pressure to the jaw. And I think that's unfortunate, because what is Holly Holm going to do? I mean, she has they granted Ronda Rousey an immediate rematch, but I don't know if does that mean that Holly cannot fight anymore? That Holly has to wait for Ronda? I hope not. I you know, I was against the rematch to begin with, because, you know, nobody wants to. I think a lot of people do not believe that Ronda is going to be able to beat Holly Holm. It was such a mismatch. It looked like there was just these two fighters almost looked like they were in different classes. Now, you know, granted, Ronda can maybe learn some wrestling, maybe move outside of her judo and try to get inside and take her down, basically offset Holly Holm's judo defense. Or she can learn how to strike better, and she can make it a more competitive that way, although I don't see it happening. I don't see Ronda really bridging the skill gap in terms of striking. You know, we got to remember, Holly Holm has been striking for a long time. She's been boxing a long time. And so I hope that Holly Holm is able to fight. There are some opponents that I want to see her fight before she fights Ronda Rousey. But from what I understand, it's going to be an immediate rematch. And I don't think that's good for women's MMA. But without going any further, let's welcome our next guest to the program, Mr. Luke Zachrich. Luke, welcome to the program, my friend.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Good. We're glad to be able to feature you on the show. And I want to start out by talking about your recent call-out. I was talking about this earlier in the program, of Alessio Sicara. You called out Sicara for a fight in Bellator on social media. And, in fact, I'll allow you to call him out now if you want as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? Alessio Sicara was a guy that I would never say I looked up to him, but when I was coming like up in the game, he was kind of one of the featured fighters in the UFC. Everybody knew who he was, everything like that. And I would love to fight somebody like him. I don't know if he's an asshole. I don't know if he's a prick or anything like that. So I'm not calling him out for any other reason besides the fact that, you know, I'm going to be 34 years old here soon. I just got released by the UFC, and for me to get, you know, excited about going out and picking up some fights, it has to be in A, a big organization, or B, against big name opponents. And, you know, I feel like you can kind of kill two birds with one stone right there. They're looking for somebody for Alessio to fight. So, you know, that's a fight that I want. I'd get excited about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I must admit that when I saw you tweet about this matchup, I thought it was very solid. I mean, both you and Alessio have a well-rounded game, but fans saw you have most success with striking in the octagon. I think I would be intrigued by this matchup as well, the aspects of this matchup. I mean, I remember when Sicara came onto the scene, you know, his boxing style was something of a rarity in that division. Just seeing someone at 205 throw quick combinations like that and land a high volume of punches, it was exciting. Are you someone who came up in MMA watching his fights and imagining how you would match up with him as a fighter of that sort?
You know what? I don't think I was pretty, you know, kind of dug in a little bit when he was in the UFC, you know, but that's when I was, you know, thinking I was going to get my shot when I was, you know, like 26, 27 years old, something like that. I always thought it would be a fun fight. I think it would be a fun fight now. You know, I think he's a perfect matchup for me. I've got it. I mean, you look at my losses, most of them are by way of submission, but they're all to good guys. I'm a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It fucking breaks my heart that I've got a couple submission losses on my record. But, you know, my big thing, and this is why I feel like this fight would be so great, is that, you know, anytime that I've always been able to, you know, really put things together, which hasn't really been that many times, but when I've really been able to shine is when the threat of a takedown, or if it's just going to be, you know, more of a grappling match inside the cage, I'm fine when I'm grappling. It's when I'm trying to mix everything together, you know. So, like, this fight, if I could get this fight with Alessio, I mean, and I'm willing to say it right now, I mean, gentleman's agreement, no takedowns. I mean, I would do a 100% boxing fight with this guy if I could. You know what I mean? That's how bad that I want that fight. And I think it would, you know what I mean? I feel like I could pick him apart on the feet, and, you know, it would be a good fight for both of us.
Yeah, and that's what the fans want to see. I mean, both of you have a lot of offensive ability, and you're both willing to get into fights in the cage. In fact, some people might call it the biggest drawback you both have, a tendency to sometimes appear to have abandoned strategy. But sometimes that's what makes a matchup have the potential to be truly exciting and surprising, which this fight does. Of course, it means that this fight with Sakara would be a dangerous matchup for you both, and I give you props for having the balls to request it like that, Luke. But he was DQ'd for smashing Patrick Cote badly, and Cote has one of the best chins in the game, and certainly the middleweight division at that time. And in some ways, his viciousness probably cost him that fight as he started to get wild with the shots on Cote and landed one to the back of the head. But otherwise, I think Cote was done there. It was a very scary performance from Sakara, even though both of you guys had a couple recent UFC losses. We've also seen that you're capable of taking out top opponents. What makes you want this fight from a career perspective? I mean, Alessio obviously has a name, and it seems like Bellator is going to expand into Italy. But I was wondering if there are other aspects of this potential matchup that you thought you'd allow to showcase your skills as a fighter.
You know what? It's not necessarily about, like, I would love to fight for Bellator now that, you know, I'm done with my UFC portion of my career. But it's mostly, it's because it'd be against the opportunity to fight somebody like Alessio. I love his style. I love his gameness. I think it would be a good fight, and it would be one of those fights that would get me really excited to train for. You know, I've been through so much crap as far as politically in the MMA world, and, you know, just to be able to get out there, have one more, like, run around and do this thing and really go for it and have a game opponent like him, I would just love the opportunity. You know, somebody that I could go in there and I know that we're going to sit in the pocket and trade and, you know, really throw down. I think that's the fight that would get me excited, really make me want to train hard for it. And, you know, and then and then fighting there's a, you know, a main event on a Bellator card is never a bad thing either.
Yeah, Sakara has some losses, but mostly to guys who are primarily grapplers. And looking at your record, you definitely have a lot of submission finishes. Where do you see yourself on the grappler / striker spectrum? And it appears that you're well-rounded, but can you give people, you kind of went into a little bit earlier, but a little bit of a background on your submission and striking training?
You know, like I've really put, and this is... My last fight in UFC, I was submitted by Dan Kelly. Ton of circumstances surrounding that one, you know. But, like, as far as my straight Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I mean, I'm a very accomplished grappler. You know, I've got some Pan Am titles placed at Worlds in the no-gi at brown belt. You know, I've got a pretty extensive grappling background. My biggest thing has been actually, you know, that's where I've also had some trouble in MMA. I'm so striking heavy and striking that the range kind of has thrown me off in the past a little bit. So, like, if I'm on, I'm on. I'm a dangerous opponent for anybody.
Right.
But I've also had some fights where, you know, I just, you know, for some reason I wasn't clicking that night. Like, the last fight with Dan Kelly when I fought in Australia, I just wasn't clicking that night. And, you know, it didn't happen, you know. So I feel like this fight with Alessio, just knowing, like, stylistically how both of us would approach this fight, I think that's what's going to bring the best out of me. You know, I think win or lose that fight, that's where you're going to see me at my best. And, you know, one of those super exciting fights for the fans.
Is it fair to say that this is a striker versus different kind of striker fight? I mean, you seem to be more of a rangy jab and kicker, whereas Sakara is mostly throwing hands and some occasional kicks.
You know what, man? It all depends on the opponent. You know, like I have one professional boxing fighter. That's why I was going to go down that route before the UFC signed me back this in 2014 again. But honestly, I'm most comfortable in the pocket. And, you know, I wouldn't have to fight at a distance as much with him. I feel like, especially if, you know, he's going to be committed to the striking as much as I would too. I feel like we could really mix it up and get inside and trade and not have to worry about somebody taking me down as much and stuff like that. So, like, you put me against a guy that's, you know, like when I fought that Guillermo Vasconcelos, who is a, I think he's a 2- or 3-time world champion black belt. You know, I kept the distance on him just because I knew that was, you know, that was my best bet, not getting, you know, not having the fight take place on the mat. I knew I could pick him apart from outside. But, you know, like that fight with Vasconcelos, that was another, you know, prime example of, you know, me being on. When I'm on, man, I'm on. Like, there's not too many people out there I feel like could beat me. But, you know, that's the biggest challenge for me is to actually bring what I can to the table on a, you know, every single fight, not just one here and one there.
Well, you know, he also showed a good inside game against Cote with the elbows, and there was no denying the hammer fist to the back of the head was effective. But you seem like the person who would have a clinch game as well, potentially with the knees.
Yeah, I mean, you could go back. You know, I've got a pretty, extensive fight career. I've been doing it a long time, and, you know, I think every fight I've been able to showcase something different. You know, I've got a lot of submission wins. I've got, you know, a pretty decent amount of TKO or knockouts. I've got a couple decisions on my record, but, you know, they're all one-sided decisions basically for me. You know, and when I go out, man, I go out on my sword. I'm getting, you know, I've never lost a decision. I've gotten finished every single time, you know, because I just put it all out there when I fight.
Folks, I think this is a solid matchup. We support this hypothetical matchup. Hopefully it'll become a reality. Luke, I want to talk about your recent UFC stint in a moment. But before we do, I wanted to get a sense of your goals in terms of and what you might potentially do next. I mean, I imagine that almost every professional has one eye on the UFC at all times and potentially getting back there in your case. But I feel like some people overplay that card. Was a free agent, I wouldn't be talking about getting back in the company I just left straight away. I'd say, heck no, I'd sign with Bellator and want to be a Bellator champion. But there are some welcome fighters stopping off there to try and jump back to the UFC, but with Viacom on the scene and Scott Coker in charge, you never know how things might play out. We could see Bellator making their moves, and in a less crowded field with sponsorship options, it may be a good option to explore. And one thing's for sure, they certainly need middleweights. I mean, they have some very interesting fighters in that division, but they don't seem to have the numbers. They need to bring in a solid field of free agents to narrow down some contenders for the champion there. Do you have any thoughts on the current champ, Bellator? We know that he has good punches and kicks.
Who is the champ in Bellator?
Carvalho.
You know what? I don't ever think I've seen him fight, man. I know
he's...
I
yeah,
know
he's,
when the Halsey, you know, I've seen him
right.
fight a couple times. I remember him losing the title. I can't remember who he did. I don't watch a ton of MMA anymore, really. Just it's so freaking oversaturated at this point.
Right,
so
I agree.
It's tough to stay up with everything, man. I mean, I give you guys kudos, dude, for being able to stay on top of the game as much as you do. But yeah, I mean, super kind of long question, you know, but just as far as where I see myself, I mean, I honest to God, I'm so pissed off at the way that things ended with the UFC. I'd go back there if they gave me a good offer, I guess, but my goal is not to get back to the UFC. You know, it was the way things ended there with that big cut that they did that I was obviously a part of. I just thought it was pretty shitty, you know what I mean? And
right.
I'm at a point right now, like I said, with this fight with Alessio Sakara, if I could pick this one up and you know, have Bellator pick this fight up and sign it. Really, I mean, I'm like I said, I'm almost 34. I've been fighting professionally for over 10 years. For me to actually go out and, like, really get super excited about having some fights and stuff like that, like, all I care about is being able to fight big-name opponents in decent organizations where, you know, the pay isn't going to be pennies. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So, like, when I saw that they needed an opponent for Sakara, I mean, that was one of those fights. Like, you know, I would love to fight for Bellator now. They had offered me a couple different fights and some contracts before I signed at the UFC, and I turned it down every time because I was never a big Bjorn Rebney fan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now that Scott Coker's there, man, I think it would be so awesome to fight for him. You know, he's one of those guys that, that you know, as a fighter, like, I feel like it would be just – I think it would be really cool to, you know, be employed by them and be under Scott at this point just because I think he's done some great things with the sport and he's going to do a heck of a lot more with what Bellator has. You know, so it's something that would be really exciting to be a part of. That UFC, I don't give a shit really if I fight there again or not. You know, I kind of know that there's a, you know, there's a time clock on every fighter, and I'm not gonna, you know, waste the next couple of years trying to build up wins on a regional scale fighting for pennies, and you know, just to get back to that shit show they've got going on right now.
Let's talk about your run in the UFC briefly, so people know you've been working on since. You're known as having the style to shut down grapplers in particular. We saw it when you had a near technical fight against Bamba in the UFC. I mean, you shut him down with takedown defense, lots of jabs, kicks, and even threatened the guillotine. Would it be safe to say that that's your most complete performance in the cage so far, Luke?
I had a couple fights on the regional level that I was probably more proud of. But as far as like really putting it out there and showing my striking off, that was probably one of my better performances that I've ever had. I've been one of those guys that either finishes fights real quick, and then over the last couple of years when I made this little resurgence, you know, I had a couple of decisions, but one fight against a kid named Marcus Finch, I mean, that was, you know, wrestling, boxing, kickboxing, you know, jiu-jitsu, I showed a little bit of everything in that fight, so I'm kind of that's one of the fights I'm a little more proud of as far as from an MMA standpoint. But, you know, with that fight against Bomba, I think it was pretty flawless. And having it be in the UFC, I mean, that was something that, you know, I'm pretty proud of too.
Well, take us through that fight and why you think everything came together. Was it a matter of preparation or being in the right mental state at the time?
You know, I think it was everything at that point as far as, you know, I didn't feel like I got picked up by the UFC. I mean, I was basically ready to retire from MMA. I had boxed like the month before my first professional boxing fight. I was pretty burned out on the whole MMA scene. I mean, you guys see these guys and you talk to guys like me every day. It's a tough environment, especially, you know, being involved in it as long as I have. And unfortunately, it's a super political game too. So, you know, I felt like I'd done everything I could. I should have been in the UFC, you know, years after being on the Ultimate Fighter and all that stuff, and it just never happened. I've dealt with a ton of injuries. So when I got picked back up, I mean, it was a 10-day notice or 11-day notice fight that I had for Kyle Magalhaes. And, you know, I went in there and I feel like I kind of got the shaft on that fight as far as I got kneed in my sack, I guess you could say. And they just stopped the fight after that. I mean, I was completely lifted off the ground. But really, when it all came down to it, I didn't care. I finally had got back into the UFC, got that contract. So when I had the opportunity to fight Vasconcelos, you know, I had a full fight camp. It was the first time that I actually got to show off, you know, my worth, basically, and everything that I'd done to improve my game over the years. And it really showcased that night. So, you know, so I went 1-1. I had my next opportunity in Australia against Dan Kelly, who's a 4-time Olympian in judo. And, yeah, I just, for some reason, man, I'd never felt that off in a fight. And, you know, I'm not trying to take anything away from Dan. You know, he put a, you know, fantastic game plan together, cut me off, did what he needed to do, and, you know, got the submission right at the end of the first. But I was off that night, you know what I mean? I couldn't put anything together, and nothing I was doing wasn't working, and, you know, he just frustrated me, and I don't know what the hell happened that night. But yeah, I mean, so really, it was those three performances, you know, and typically, you know, UFC, up until that point, you know, guys were getting two fights. A lot of them were getting three fights before they were releasing them. So, and then they waited a year after my fight because I'd been sidelined with some injuries, and then randomly, as I'm trying to get another fight, they just let me go.
Yeah, I wanted to, because you had mentioned that the MMA game is political. What do you mean by that? Do you mean that some of the decisions that they make are arbitrary, or it's based on, you know, personal relationships in the UFC, or, you know, can you expand on that?
Well, you know, it all depends, you know, like, so for me, coming off the Ultimate Fighter, you know, and this is,
right.
this is just me, you know, like, so I was in the first season that you had to have, you had to fight to get in the house, you know, they didn't tell us, you know what I mean? So everybody had to fight to get in the house. Well, so everybody actually won a fight there, you know, so I had training partners, buddies, you know, all these guys that I knew over the years that had done tough, everybody always fought on the finale. So, so all the guys on my season, everybody at least won one fight. And then, you know, so then they released, I think there's only three guys from our whole season that fought on the finale, four guys total that fought the UFC like right after that. So they released everybody, didn't let, you know, even give you the opportunity to fight on the finale when, you know, you're at home. So, you know, that was kind of a salty little taste. So really what I feel like it comes down to, it all depends on who your manager is. Or what team you're at. You know, if you're at a big team, you're going to have better opportunities for management, stuff like that. And, you know, who's in tight with Joe Silva, who's not, you know, that whole stuff. So, and really it's a time thing. And it's not necessarily just the UFC. I mean, it's a pain in the ass to get fights at a regional level for guys that are decent. You know what I mean? So I've got guys that train at my gym now that should be in the UFC. And they just can't get fights. Nobody will fight these guys. You know, Dan Spahn, who was on season 19 or 20 of Tough, I mean, he was probably one of the, more known guys on that season, the Ultimate Fighter. Had a couple good fights. He lost in the finale, so they cut him. And, you know, he's been trying to get back. That kid would fight anybody, anywhere, basically any weight class that he's capable of doing. And, you know, he's still not back there. You know what I mean? And it's just mind-blowing because this dude is a absolute killer. Like, he just had a bad fight the night of the finale. And really, I think the lights kind of put the shock to him for the most part. And, you know, he's been struggling. And it's not necessarily that he's not good enough to be in the UFC because I think he could be, you know, an impact guy at the 205-pound division. But politically, you know, the dude cannot get a fight for the life of him almost. You know, it's been like a year and a half, and he just fought this last weekend, had to move up to heavyweight, fought a pretty big heavyweight, you know, and he's a 205-pounder just so he could get another fight. So,
wow.
You know, and there's shit, man. I mean, I could talk forever about the politics that go into this.
I'm really
stuff,
interested
but,
because, I mean, as long as you, because it's interesting to hear what goes on in this organization. We've heard fighter gripes over the years, and people talking about, you know, some of the relationships and some of the decisions. But, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to find guys that are really willing to open up on these issues.
Well, here's what the deal is. Okay, so, and, you know, I don't want this whole interview to come off like I'm bitching and bad-mouthing the UFC because it's not the UFC. It's the whole game of MMA. You know what I mean? It's
right.
An ugly, ugly world. And, you know, unfortunately, UFC is the top of the, you know, it's the top of the mountain. That's where everybody wants to be. So, you know, they're going to kind of take the brunt when it comes down to a lot of stuff. But, so here's what happens. So, you put UFC up on a pedestal, you know, because they are like the pinnacle of the sport. Everybody wants to be there. Everybody would do anything. I mean, I remember saying, you know, telling my manager at the time, I'm like, dude, I would fight for free just to get an opportunity to get back to the UFC and fight them. And I swear to God, I would have fought for nothing. You know, they didn't need to pay me to go take that fight on 10 days notice. I would have done it for free. Just give me a contract and let me fight, you know, pay me after that, obviously. So you, like, build it up. And, you know, like, I've been around the game for a long time. I've trained with former world champions. I've trained with, you know, some of the top guys in the sport. And you just you see all the stardom and all this crap. And, you know, I never did this for the stardom. But you put this, like, this picture of, like, you know, it's just this great thing. And, you know, once you get there, everybody's going to know who you are. And, you know, you're going
right.
to make a ton of money and all this stuff. And, really, you get there, and it's nothing, man. So, like, a guy like me who is, you know, I'm not, I would say that I was on the bottom tier of the UFC trying to make my way up, you know, make a name for myself. man, I don't even know if you asked Dana White who I was, like, if he'd know who the fuck I was right now. You know, and I can't knock him for that, man. I mean, they've got a ton of guys on their they've got a ton of guys on the roster, all this stuff, you know. But you're just a dispensable body to those guys. You know, like, it's just not, there's nothing special about it. You know, unless you're a big name or a big prospect or something like that, you are nobody special or nothing special when you walk in there, too. So it's just tough, you know. You build up this, this picture of what it's going to be like, and you know how everything's going to, you know, kind of change for you once you get there. And then, you know, at this day and age, like they take the Reebok deal comes into play,
right.
Changes the whole sponsorship game. I was actually really excited about the USADA testing that they started doing. You know, but then there's other crap that goes along with it too. You know, with being an independent contractor, but basically, you know, have them being able to show up at your house whenever you want, and then like, you know, or you have to let them know where you are everywhere at all times and stuff like that. So it just it's stressful, man. There's so much crap that goes into it. It's just really not all the shiny lights and walk into the cage and stuff like that. So unfortunately, it's a little disheartening.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a lot of pressure, I mean, because, like you said, you are dispensable. You know, you lose one or two fights, and that could be the end of your career there. And it's because of the surplus of fighters that they have there, the amount of fighters. I think I read one time they had something close to 400 fighters or something to that effect under their banner.
They're over five now, or they were over five.
Yeah.
I think, or they were trying to get down to 500 or something along those lines. I mean, it's crazy. But, you know, when you're doing, you know, two, three shows a month sometimes, and you're going all over the world, I mean, you kind of have to have that many guys, especially with the amount of injuries that are, and, you know, the dropout changes of fights and stuff like that. I mean, it's tough, you know. So next thing you know, you're signing all these guys because you need to fill opponents and you need to fill slots, and now your roster is enormous. But, you know, so who knows? You know, the thing that always got me is, you know, you get there and you tell, like, you know, you don't want to say no to Joe Silva. That's the last thing. So when that phone rings and they offer you a fight, there's no, like, let me think about it. You know what I mean? Like, you say yes. That's all there is, you know.
Right,
and
I think
guys in the past that have – you know, tried to be picky or choosy, especially guys that are, you know, trying to make a name for themselves there. Like, you just don't say no. Like, you don't pick your fights, you know, like on the regional level.
Right.
You can say, I don't like that fight, you know what I mean? Or I want to fight this guy instead of that guy or something like that. In the UFC, man, you do not say no. And if you say no, you're on the shit list and they're going to shelf you. So,
right.
So, you know, that's the thing that bothers me the most about my situation is that, you know, I took a fight on 10 days notice that was obviously not a good fight for me. You know, you come back, fight your next fight, and then, you know, then they, I was supposed to fight in Austin, Texas, for it would have been like a year ago in November, and then they moved me to, or they said, okay, you can't fight in Austin, we're going to have to fight in Australia. Well, now I go spend a ton of money to take my other coach over, because they only fly one coach, go over, fight in Australia, lost the fight, broke my foot, broke my toe, so I was off, came back. Had a baby that was born premature, so I told them that I wasn't going to fight until July. You know, I said yes to the last two fights, and, you know, I wanted to spend time with my wife and my son that was born early. You know, we didn't know if there was going to be problems or anything like that. They're like, oh, yeah, cool, cool, cool. So I come back, and I hurt my back again. So I had a bulge disc in my back, and said I couldn't fight until November, December, January, you know, so I was finally back, ready, training, trying to get a fight, and then, you know, he had me on the list to get a fight, and then next thing you know, I get a call thinking it's going to be an opponent, my manager, you know, I hadn't heard from him, I was assuming that they had found an opponent for me, and it's like, dude, I don't know how to tell you this, but the UFC is releasing you.
Wow.
I mean, you want to talk about, like, being shocked and surprised, you know what I mean, so... So, yeah, I have no idea. You know, it's kind of, I don't know, I'm not happy with the way that it ended. That's why, like, you know, would I fight in the UFC again? Yes. Do I care if I ever fight there again? Absolutely not. So, yeah, so, like, just the politics, man, it just, it doesn't make sense. I don't know if I was, you know, if I was a Jackson or a ATT guy or something like that. I don't know if I would have got cut. You know what I mean? But, unfortunately,
yeah.
I had yeah, like, so I say 2014 was probably like one, as far as things that happened for me, it was probably the best year of my life. 2015, I mean, I was hurt for a whole entire year. I mean, it was just complete shit, you know, my son being born early and all that stuff. It was a really scary time. Had some other family issues going on, and then to cap it all off, the UFC caught me. So it's like, you know.
What do you think could be done, I mean, to rectify this? I mean, is this just the nature of the beast in an industry, in the fight industry, where fighters are independent contractors? They don't have the marketplace is essentially working against them. It's very, very difficult to negotiate with the UFC. It's just very, very difficult.
You're not Ronda Rousey, Conor McGregor, or John Jones. You're really not negotiating with the UFC. You know, like
exactly.
There's no negotiating about it. You know, so. But no, it's the nature of the beast, though, man. So, like, you know, I know I'm probably bitching and complaining way more than I have to anybody else. But, you know, you're asking questions, and I'm trying to give you an honest answer here. But, you know, it really, what it all comes down to it is it's the nature of the beast. Can you do anything about it? No. So what can you do? You know, you just kind of roll with it and go with it. And, hey, you know, it happens. I'm happy that I got an opportunity to go back there and fight after, you know, being on the Ultimate Fighter in 2008 and all that stuff. And would I have liked to actually get another fight and, you know, prepare for it like I was supposed to and stuff? Absolutely. But, you know, it's over and, you know, we move on and hopefully we go on to greener pastures where you'll be happier and not have to worry about all the, you know, all the new crap that, you know, the UFC has going on with them now.
I want to explore the Dan Kelly fight because I was shocked to see you shoot for a takedown against him. I didn't expect you to do that. What was going through your mind when you did that? I mean, were you concerned with the stand-up? And both of you guys traded punches, but you didn't look visibly hurt at all. Why go for a takedown?
No, I never felt hurt in that fight. But, you know, my game plan on Dan was to this is kind of like me giving up secrets, but I don't care. But so for me, like as far as a striking standpoint, I always feel better when I'm the guy controlling the pace of the fight, where I'm moving forward. I mean, I think a lot of strikers feel that way. But for Dan, we knew, obviously, I didn't want to tie up with him. The thing about fighting a judo guy like Dan, or even, you know, all these girls that have to fight somebody like Ronda Rousey, there's not a ton of good judo people around, you know. So how the hell do you train for somebody that could, you know, toss you on your head and break your neck? You know, you really, you know, you can get with good Greco-Roman wrestlers and stuff like that. I had some great wrestlers that I trained with here in Columbus. But as far as, you know, a world, like, and that's the thing, Dan Kelly is, like, actually, like, a world-class level judoka. So I really respected his judo game. And game plan going into that fight was going to, you know, stay on the outside, move, never get greedy, never let him bait me into a fight. Try to stick to it, never be in front of the guy. And I mean, in all of his fights, he never was aggressive like he was in that fight. He just cut me off. So when I went for that takedown, I didn't really want to take him down. I was getting frustrated with him moving me and me constantly being, you know, pressured and pushed back and not feeling like I had anywhere to go where I could never set my feet and actually get some shots off. So I didn't intend to take him down. I was trying to get him to respect my space a little bit. So when I got in, I actually got deeper than I expected. It was more of a level change, but the dude was just right in my face the whole entire time. That when I got in there, I'm like, all right, well, here we go. And then I got taken down off of it. So really, I was just trying to get him to respect my space a little bit and back the fuck off. So,
I mean, was it a learning experience or?
Kind of. I mean, you know, I think every fight, whether you win or lose, is a learning experience. You know, I think just some situations surrounding that fight kind of sucked that I even had to go into it and do it. But, you know, whatever, it is what it is. And I'd love to be able to actually fight Dan Kelly again. You know, nothing against him. He's a really nice guy. I actually wish I could get to know him a little bit better. Going into that fight, I really had a lot of respect for him for some stuff that he'd done in his life, even outside of, you know, fighting and, you know, his Olympic stuff and, you know, being a family man and all that stuff. But, you know, just I think any competitor, you know, anybody that I've ever lost to, I would absolutely want to fight him again just to, you know, see if I could solve the puzzle a little bit. But I guess as far as learning something, you know, I kind of I can get mad at myself. You know, there's I'm a pretty accomplished grappler, and to get submitted like that. I mean, honestly, I felt like I wasn't even, you know, didn't even get anything going. Like, I felt like a white belt grappling with him that day. I couldn't get anything going on the ground, and I'm more disappointed in myself off of that performance than anything.
Well, it seems that when fights get desperate for him, which is usually about 60 seconds, and he goes into a different gear and can catch people off guard. I mean, it seems like some fighters expect to stay tactical and keep their distance, but when to have success against Kelly, he just goes into the killer be killed mode, and it could be overwhelming. Was there any of that in your loss to him? Is it fair to say that you could be a slow starter at times?
You know what? I mean, I'm especially as I've gotten a little bit older and learned, not that my body slowed down at all or anything like that, but as I've gotten better at martial arts and, you know, gotten better with my striking and understand the game a little bit more, I definitely start slower. I mean, even in the gym, I mean, if you watch any of my earlier fights, I mean, it was like from the time that bell rung, I was going to be in your face. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way I used to fight. And I've slowed myself down on purpose. So I guess, you know, like with that Kelly fight, you know, he got on me so quick. I think he caught me off guard a little bit and didn't let me start, you know, and getting in my groove. I mean, in that fight, I absolutely was a slow starter there. So, and my fight with Vasconcelos, you know, he didn't kind of put the pedal down at all and just let me dictate that pace. So I kind of set it wherever I wanted. You know, that's why I had so much success there that night.
Well, even though all your losses, from what I could tell, have been fairly early, you're also very capable of taking out opponents quickly, too. How much have you had to be introspective and balance your tendency to want to finish people quickly with being tactical and patient?
Well, so I had a big shift, and as far as my overall, like, my outlook and my view on being a fighter in general. So I used to be this kid. I mean, I was in incredible shape, but I had no clue how to pace myself. So when you watch my first fights, I mean, the way that I looked at fighting was like, this dude is honestly trying to, like, hurt me or kill me or whatever you want to call it, and I'm going to do the same to him. I mean, I looked at it like I was fighting in the street, basically. And, you know, so it was like from the time that bell rang, I mean, I am going, every punch was 100%. And it really, it kind of worked out pretty well for me early on because I was finishing so many people so quick. But there was a couple fights, like when I fought for the XFO title in Chicago, I fought, you know, he's a journeyman veteran, and the guy had, you know, 100 and some fights or something like that. His name's Bill Hill or William Hill. And I knocked him out at like 4 minutes and 56 seconds of the first round, and I was so tired after that fight. Like, I thought I was going to have a heart attack in the back, or an aneurysm, or something like, or a heart attack and an aneurysm. I don't know. I mean, I felt so bad. So, it was because I didn't pace myself whatsoever. I mean, there was no anything. You know, like, I used to be one of Rich Franklin's one of his main sparring partners back right when he was coming off of his loss to Anderson in the first fight, and I spent, you know, 4.5-5 years down there training with him, and I would watch Rich and see how he would go in, and I mean, he would get a fresh guy, he'd go five fives every sparring day, no matter what, maybe some more sometimes, but I would go one round with him, and I'd be so tired, I'd have to sit out and wait for a 5-minute break to go in for my next round. Well, he had another guy, and by the end of the 5 rounds, I mean, he's still looking better than I do after 1 round with him. And I just never understood how he did it, because I could do everything that he could do, but I could never actually, like, get in the ring or get in the cage and put my conditioning to work like he did. So it took some time. So then when I was on The Ultimate Fighter, I lost a fight to Dan Kramer, who, you know, did pretty well for himself after Tough and went to Bellator,
right,
and, you know, had some pretty good runs and some tournaments and stuff. But Dan fought the exact same way that I did. And, I mean, it was just the two of us just went to the middle. There was no such thing as a jab. We just both, like, swung for the fences the whole entire time. And it was the first time I'd ever been out of the first round, and I couldn't finish him. So I thought Dan was, like, you know, I thought he was gassed out. I'm like, I'm going to get this dude right at the beginning of the round. I stood up, and my legs were gone. I thought he was finished. He was done. Like, I jumped up quicker than he did. I almost finished him at the end of the first. And I stood up off the stool, and I'm like, my legs almost gave out from underneath me. And I went out and I had nothing for the rest of that round. So Dan finished me in the second round. And, you know, like I talked earlier about how they cut us all after that show. So I looked back at that fight. I mean, it just really stuck with me for a long time that I needed to learn how to pace myself, you know. And I talked to Bob Radford, who's still my coach, but he was my coach at that time down in Cincinnati too. And, you know, we worked on developing my jab and pacing myself and getting through the rounds, and we changed a lot of stuff sparring. So from that point forward, when I fought Dan Kramer, I kind of changed my style around to not necessarily like – I just to be more patient. That way I could learn how to pace myself and fight. And it's really gotten better and better as the years have gone by. And it's made me so much of a better fighter than I used to be. Because I can, you know, I can hit the gas pedal when I need to, or I could back off if I need to. So,
right.
So yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, I wouldn't call it a slow starter. I'm just using my mind a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, it seems like your best performances could possibly come when you take a measured approach. I mean, is that something that you have to weigh against the desire to be exciting and put on memorable fights, even though doing so exposes you to the dangers of losing and being finished?
You know what, like, and that's the thing. So, well, first off, I don't know if I'm like good enough to make actually like have memorable fights or like, you know, have people like remember me. You know, I'm not a John Jones or a Rich Franklin or somebody like that. So, you know, if somebody can remember my fights, that's awesome, man. I mean, something worked out, I guess, you know, but I don't look at myself as like anybody like super special. But, I've had this talk with, you know, I have two boxing coaches now, and I've had this talk with both of these guys, you know, where it's like, if I could find a balance between what I used to be and what I am now, I mean, I don't know if there's anybody that could stop me, honestly. Like, still, you know, until I get maybe 36, 37, 38, I don't know. I feel like if I could find a balance between, you know, that 110% all forward, you know, no backup, no pulling punches, none of that, to where I'm at now, I feel like I could, you know, have made some serious waves in the fight game.
Yeah. Well, going back to the Bellator, possible Bellator fight, the possible fight against you and Alessio Sicara, is there anyone besides Sicara on the Bellator roster that appeals to you in terms of fighting? I mean, we're finally getting to an era of MMA where people understand the value of fighters trying to set up fights that promoters have to stage due to fan interest. But being willing to talk about potential opponents and matchups is increasingly important, even without the craziness and disrespect which some people try to use, which you haven't used, and I appreciate that. I respect you for not, you know, trying to trash talk your way into a desired fight. But is there anybody else besides Sicara, not necessarily even in Bellator, but maybe in other promotions that you may want to fight?
You know, I don't know. I don't know actually anybody on World Series of Fighting's 85-pound roster. There's, you know, even 1FC. I don't know if they even have any. I don't know, like, as far as names. But what's cool is, like, Bellator is, like, actually starting to get some decent, like, you know, they've got some talent, and not just talent. Like, I think all of these organizations have talent. But, like, what I said, like, to me, what gets me excited and makes me, like, want to train and not retire and, you know, hang the gloves up or go just do boxing or something like that. Bellator has guys that people know. You know, you've got Melvin Manhoff, you've got Joe Schilling, you know, and both of those guys, I might have to take those guys down. I don't know. But, you know, and then there's Kendall Grove is with Bellator still, I believe, you know. So there's some really good, like, name guys. So, and you know, like, just being able to fight, like, guys that, you know, somebody sees a poster and, like, damn, I know Luke Sakarich and I know who Joe Schilling is, or I know who Melvin Manhoff is. I mean, everybody knows who Melvin is. But, you know, that's what's exciting. Like, that's why I would like to go to Bellator now. Is just because of, you know, some of those marquee matchups where there's name opponents. And, you know, like, the pay scale's good. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I've been fighting too long to be on a regional level and you know, taking, you know, penny paychecks and stuff like that or, you know, arguing with the promoter over a percentage of ticket sales and crap. You know, I don't have any interest in doing that. You know, like, if I'm going to continue to fight in MMA, I want to fight for a very respectable organization, and I want to fight for, you know, people that, you know names. And that's the tough thing, you know, like, even if you're talking like UFC, you know, it's tough right now to, like, if you're like an entry level UFC fighter, a guy that's kind of at the bottom of your division or just brought in or something, you're gonna have to fight a lot of fights before you even get like those marquee name fights.
Right.
I would have rather been brought right into the UFC and gotten fed to the wolves and fight guys that people know, because I feel like I still have good opportunities or good chances to beat guys like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how cutthroat and how tough the UFC is with guys there. You know what I mean? Like, so really that's why I would want to go to Bellator. That's why I would like to go to Bellator, is because of, you know, those name matchups that are available.
When are you expecting to be back in the cage?
You know, my back's pretty healed up, so really it would be one of those things I would, you know, February, March, something like that, if I get the opportunity. So, April, I think mid-April is the Italy fight, so that's ideally when I would be back in the cage. You know, like, honestly, like, that would be a perfect situation for me. I feel like as far as training time, planning for a camp, you know, getting a fight that I want, ideally I would sit around and wait for that Alessio Sicara fight right now.
Well, listen, I'll let you get back to training in a moment, but first let's tell people how they can keep up with you on social media, find out where you're going to be competing next.
Well, I'm about the worst social media person on the face of the planet, but at Luke Zachrich on Twitter and Instagram, and Luke Zachrich MMA on Facebook. So, yeah, follow me. There's not a lot going on there right now unless Alessio says he wants to take this fight. And, you know, and then I'll start buzzing on my social media again.
Well, Luke, thanks for appearing with us on Carson's Corner. There's a lot more we could talk about, including The Ultimate Fighter. So please come back on the show in the future and give us an update on your tour.
Yeah, you guys get me on, man. You got more out of me than anybody ever has, actually. I just couldn't shut the hell up tonight.
Hey, that's the way we like it here. That's what we want to do. We want to give the fans the most material that we can possibly have, so they have a good feel for you as a person, you as a career, your career, and where you go forward. So that's what we're known for here.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, my friend. Good luck in the future.
All right, guys. Take it easy. We'll see you.
Luke Zachrich here on Carson's Corner. Big thanks. We appreciate the time. Yeah, that was good, man. Really, really good in-depth interview. As we always try to do here on Carson's Corner, we'll be right back after this time out here, so keep it right here on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Carson's Corner, and I am Bob Carson. We apologize. We had a few callers that called in, but we weren't able to get to them. One from a 484 area code, another, escapes me. We apologize about that. We always try to get to the callers as quick as we possibly can, but it just wasn't possible. So keep it right here on Carson's Corner.
Get over here!
welcome back to Carson's Corner. I know we're scheduled to go to the top of the hour, but I'm probably just going to give my UFC 194 picks, and that's going to be it. Unfortunately, I have so much to do later on tonight. But UFC 194 is going to be taking place, and I got to tell you, this is actually the first UFC, probably in about 5 or 6 years, that I'm actually going to watch the pay-per-view. I'm actually going to order the pay-per-view, okay, because I think this is one of the best cards that I've seen in a while. If you heard me on the John Boy McElroy podcast, the martial arts chat podcast, you'll know my picks, but I'm going to run through them real quickly here. Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. I'm starting from the top down. Don't ask why. Conor McGregor is in Jose Aldo's head. I think this is going to be an easy match for Conor McGregor. I think Conor McGregor is going to be able to do whatever he wants with Jose Aldo. The only thing that Jose Aldo potentially has is leg kicks, but I think Conor's going to be a better striker. He's taller, he's longer, and he's going to be able to utilize his reach for a very, very good performance. So Conor McGregor will win, I predict. I also predict Chris Weidman will win over Luke Rockhold. Luke Rockhold is coming out saying he's going to finish Chris Weidman in two or three rounds. That's ridiculous. I think Luke Rockhold is going to lose. I think Weidman is probably going to TKO him. Although, I would not be surprised if Luke Rockhold won. But my gut instinct tells me that Chris Weidman is going to win. The next middleweight fight is Jacare Souza versus Yoel Romero, the Soldier of God. And I picked the Soldier of God to win here because I think he's looked better in his recent performances. Yes, he's 38 years old, 39 years old, but he's a young 38, 39 in terms of MMA career. He's not one of these guys that you think that he can't last another 3 or 4 years. And you look at Jacare Souza, he's coming off a win over Chris Camozzi, who he beat already. And, I just don't see him being able to get Yoel Romero on the ground and be able to finish him like he does most of his opponents. I think Yoel has a better too good of a wrestling game to be put on his back, and he's probably going to blitz attack Jacare and win and then be next in line possibly for Chris Weidman. Damian Maia versus Gunnar Nelson. I picked Damian Maia. I think he's probably a better grappler, even though Gunnar Nelson is a very, very good grappler. But I think Damian Maia is probably a more solid grappler and has more serious grappling credentials than does Gunnar Nelson. And the last fight on the card, the first fight actually, is the featherweight fight between Max Holloway and Jeremy Stephens. And I picked Max Holloway to win this fight. Now, even the preliminary card, which is going to be on Fox Sports 1, is certainly desirable. I mean, it's a great card all the way around, and I'll be watching it at a relative's house, folks. So I hope you enjoy it. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Carson's Corner. Please make sure to keep up with me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And make sure to follow me here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to Aaron Brink and Luke Zachrich. And until next time, show some respect.